these people who run the world understand sheeple better than you would ever believe. And you'd better quit being sheeple right this moment. You'd better pull the wool out from over your eyes. Take off that fur coat. Stand up on your own two feet. Stop buying. Get ready to fight for your freedoms or lose them all very shortly.
Hello and welcome to Dialect during BCFM's emergency schedule, incorporating the BCFM politics show with Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. We're not live, and the Bristol FM version of the show may be screened by BCFM editorial staff, so a few changes around here. Unprecedented times. The COVID-19 lockdown has seen democracy suspended, local elections and parliament. Normal behaviour such as travel and freedom of association is being criminalised. Potentially, that's up to the police. The questions, are these extreme measures justified and how long will they last? In his press release on the lockdown this week, Avon and Somerset Chief Constable Andy Marsh says the measures are indefinite. Still, the show must go on, and with contradictory reports about the origin of the virus and about what we can and can't do, we'll do our best to stay on the air every week. So we'll be looking at how to recognise and treat COVID-19, but also questioning the government's withdrawal of civil liberties. Also asking the big questions the mass media seem afraid to about the virus's origin, naturally occurring or man-made. Is COVID-19 in fact a bioweapon? Also, renewed activity at RAF Fairford in Gloucestershire. What have plane spotters been seeing there over the last few weeks, and why should we be concerned? We look at the media coverage as the BBC World Service's independent current affairs daily show, World Update, is suspended indefinitely, as well as the Victoria Derbyshire show on television and others, just when we need essential journalistic workers most. And finally, here in New Zealand, as the trial of the March 2019 mosque shooter who killed 51 worshippers in a Christchurch mosque begins, and he pleads guilty, we ask, why is the trial and Royal Commission being held in secret? And who were the three figures in red who appear at crucial points in the shooter's live streamed video? Why is the Black Sun in his manifesto also strictly banned in New Zealand? Also, Event 201 and ID 2020. Why does Bill Gates' name keep popping up in the coronavirus scandal? So we start this week with an interview with David Halpin. He's a retired orthopaedic surgeon, and I spoke to him earlier about what he makes of the coronavirus panic.
I'm David Halpin. I'm a retired orthopaedic and trauma surgeon, but I always say that I'm a doctor first and a surgeon second. I was trained at St. Mary's in Paddington, the home of penicillin, and I was trained, I think, pretty well, which included bacteriology and immunology.
I'd like to ask you, first of all, what you make of the measures that the government has brought in to limit the spread of this coronavirus.
The information coming from government and the orders are over the top, and they have created mass hysteria, as intended.
When you say they're over the top, how would you be stopping the spread of something like this?
Well, the thing is that I've just had two papers come in today, one yesterday and one just now, and it's come in from Marseille, from a laboratory which deals with about 4,000 hospital beds. And I will quote them. The problem of SARS-CoV-2 is probably overestimated, as 2.6 million people die of respiratory infections each year, compared with less than 4,000 deaths for SARS-CoV-2 at the time of writing. And the time of writing was the 2nd of March. Things have changed since then. But another group, public health doctors from the four nations of Great Britain, have not classified it most recently as a serious disease. So this is counter to what the government and and Professor Chris Whitty have been saying, it has been exaggerated.
One of the reasons that it's being suggested that maybe the government has downgraded the severity, I mean, it's not the government, sorry, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland have downgraded it, is because legally they have to do that because they don't have the protective equipment, the protective gear, these sort of hazmat suits, enough of them to go around, and they're legally supposed to do that. So they've downgraded it to get themselves out of that one.
I'm not sure about that. There's exaggeration too about the need for the PPE, as they call it, the protective equipment, when they're dealing with equally lethal, in fact, probably more lethal strains of influenza virus in the winter, you don't find them using hazmat suits. The hazmat suits were often shown on television, on BBC particularly. I only have watched BBC. That's been shown, I think, to add to the fright of people.
How unprecedented is the COVID-19 illness?
Its effects are known well in other types of influenza virus and cold virus. Apparently they have muscle pain, have a high fever, and they have a cough. And those are common symptoms of influenza. There are some particular things. The difference between the effect on younger, fit people, which is often minor or hardly noticed, and yet it can be lethal in the frail elderly, particularly, or those with medical conditions. That is a bit unusual, I would say. But what is not said is how sickly the British population is, and how possibly sickly is the Italian population. I don't know the facts about that, but there are not enough facts, and they should include autopsies and studies on the viruses within the corpses. And you don't hear much about that, but nothing about it.
So how sure can we be that the figures that we're getting are actually deaths from COVID-19?
One thing, Tony, is that the viruses, several viruses can coexist in the same body. That's one thing I've learned. No one can imagine that. These viruses can cause a pneumonia by themselves. They're, after all, being inspired as droplets, we imagine, and they settle in the lungs, and that can cause a pneumonia. I think that probably accounts for some of the elderly deaths. But they can also then happen to have a bacterial pneumonia secondary to the viral infection. And that's how a lot of people are carried off. I recall, as a medical student and young doctor, being told that pneumonia was the old man's friend. That's food for thought, isn't it? What that is indicating is that some people, as they become very aged and they fail, some of them, in fact, are failing badly, go on to nursing homes and care homes in this country, and you'll see them with their heads lolling on their chests while the television is on in the corner. These people are near to death in life.
When it comes to signing a death certificate and putting the cause of death, I mean, it seems to me that there could be multiple causes of death. What does a doctor do in those sort of circumstances?
You would be disgusted to know that of all hospital deaths currently, only about 1-2% go to autopsy. It's been shoveled aside, probably on grounds of cost involving pathologists. But I know, as a conscientious surgeon and doctor, that you need to examine the patients if they die, and then you learn more about how good or how poor you were in your diagnosis. And that is absolutely crucial in any decent medical service.
We've had unprecedented restrictions on people's freedom of association and freedom of movement. To what extent do you think are those justified from a medical point of view?
Well, it is contradictory. The fact is that people were flying in from China, where they knew they had this novel virus, so-called novel virus. There was no attempt to stop them being flown into Heathrow or elsewhere, and it was the same in America. And I wrote to an online medical journal about that very early on, saying that they'd shut the stable door when the horse had bolted. And it was the same with Ebola, when that Scottish nurse came back, Kafiki. She was allowed to come back from Sierra Leone. She was ill by the time she got to Heathrow, wasn't picked up there, is that it was negligent that she was not quarantined in Sierra Leone for the three-week incubation period for that disease, away from the sick patients, and then allowed to come home. This is an example of the shambolic nature of public health control in this country.
The trouble is, David, people will say, well, it just took them a while to get round to actually realising how serious this was.
It depends.
Just as it happened in China.
They have dismantled the public health system pretty well in this country. And a lady who I have contact with, Professor Alison Pollock, who is at Newcastle, has said this very clearly about a week ago. She speaks out for the health service as well. She's quite well known. And she said, there's no question, the public health system has been dismantled. In Devon, Devon County Council are responsible for the public health officer. And that doesn't bode well, given the average caliber of county councillors. We had a good system, and it was working better in Soho in 1858, when Dr. Snow and the councillors took the pump handle away in an epidemic of cholera, which was affecting the whole of London.
What about the symptoms, David? What are the symptoms? How do we know if we've got this? And you know,
apparently, some people hardly know that they're ill at all. They're virtually symptomless, and yet still Professor Whitty is calling it a disease. He says some of them are symptomless. Well, they don't call it a disease. But people get a fever. They have a dry cough.
That's basically a high temperature.
But some of them are going to work. They don't feel ill enough to stop working. But they have a fever, and they have a dry, persistent cough. But there are bugs been going around for the last few winters where people have had a cough for weeks on end. Probably another virus, I don't know.
What about treatment? If you were landed with your hazmat suit with a COVID-19 patient, what do you think would be a basic, you know, your basic treatment?
Well, the thing, you have to make sure that the lungs are working, and they're able to measure the oxygen concentration in the peripheral blood with these simple instruments. And you know that a minority of people are admitted to intensive care wards, usually the elderly with other medical conditions, which we keep hearing about. They talk about other medical issues is the usual term, but you never hear what those conditions are. Now, there is an epidemic of obesity in Britain, and in fact in other countries, particularly America. But obesity has a big effect on lung capacity, on your breathing capacity. The diaphragm is pushed upwards by gross obesity. And that might be one factor, among others, which causes more people to be sicker than they otherwise would be. And other things like heart failure. This country has a lot of sickly people in it. And you have to walk around your local town on a Saturday to see it. And people are very poorly informed about how they should maintain their health. Some people have given up. Some people are depressed and they don't care for themselves. And that's very obvious, in fact, if you observe as a doctor.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, what I'd like to say, actually, Tony, is that they've generated an apocalyptic atmosphere and there's a purpose in it. I don't like it. I'm concerned that there is a large fleet in the Persian Gulf, mostly American. They've now got so-called nuclear weapons on the intercontinental ballistic missiles, in the submarines as well. And cruising the Atlantic, they can still attack Iran from that. And don't forget that Netanyahu and his fellow psychopaths have been urging America to destroy Iran for the last 10 years at least. And they're waiting for a pretext. I wrote about it on the 14th of June last year in Global Research. I think I outlined it fairly well. They're waiting for a pretext, and I suspect that this is a vast distraction.
Well, you can say suspect, but do you have any evidence for that?
Right. The thing is that there is evidence of an American general in the Department of Defense who is obviously quite warm about first-strike nuclear capability. And we're dealing with a very unstable world with leaders, so-called leaders, who have massive weaponry. And the fuse is short. I'm absolutely certain that a war is in the offing.
That was Dr. David Halpin speaking to me earlier from Devon, and he was one of the doctors who questioned the alleged suicide of Dr. David Kelly back in 2003 at the time of the illegal invasion of Iraq. And that was The Specials with Ghost Town. Our next interview this week is from Oxford CND. He's talking about the situation over in Fairford. Fairford is an airfield, which is an RAF airfield, but it's actually run by the United States Air Force. And plane spotters, bless them, have been noticing quite a lot of interesting new activity there recently.
I'm Nigel Day. I'm a coordinator of Oxford Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, CND, and our concern about our local airfield, which is RAF Fairford. We tend to call it USAF Fairford. It's an American base under signage that says RAF Fairford, but in fact is a wholly American base. Now, the importance of that base is that it's a very large runway, and it is the European base for the American B-2 stealth bomber, which is the strategic nuclear-capable bomber that would lead any kind of assault. So that's a very important base. It has all the gear for that. It's the only one in Europe that can take that particular plane, and it's the base where Other bombers such as the B-52s and the B-1s have attacked Iraq in the past, so it's a very important base sitting on the Oxfordshire-Wiltshire-Gloucestershire border. Aircraft based there at the moment seem to be U-2 spy planes. So these spy planes come in and land at Fairford, stationed there for a short time, and off they go. So it has recently been mobilized up to a higher degree of importance, and so the U-2s are operating from there. But intermittently and occasionally, you will have an exercise where bombers come in. So you've got B-52 bombers, which are old bombers but nuclear capable, and you have B-1 bombers as well. At the latest plane in that kind of category is the B-2 stealth bomber, very important plane, and that will come occasionally and be stationed at Fairford.
What's the history of the base?
It goes back a long way. It was an RAF base and then kind of declined a bit. And then you'll remember in the end of the 70s, there was a question of they were going to bring cruise missiles to Britain. And they also needed a place where they could have fuel planes that would fuel bombers. And so people of Newbury didn't want the refueling planes to be stationed there. So they were stationed at Fairford to revive the base, and the cruise missiles went into Greenham Common. And so that's the history of it. It's had that kind of backup to many, many kind of things. So a refueling base and then developed into a bomber base.
Didn't the Pentagon say they would close it down a few years ago?
There was a suggestion of that, but they didn't actually say they were going to close it. What they said they would do, they would go on to a kind of care and maintenance basis. But in actual fact, it meant there were just a few Americans that stationed there to keep the base online. But they actually spent a huge amount of money on the runway, upgrading the facilities. And so we're now entering it's kind of reversed all of that in the fact that it's a much more operational base now.
Going back to the history, what was its role in past conflicts?
In the first Gulf War, B-52 bombers were stationed there, and then later in the Second Gulf War, they were stationed there again. So they attacked Iraq from Fairford. American B-52 bombers were loaded up with bombs, and they attacked Iraq from Fairford. The bombs were supplied from the biggest bomb store in Europe, which is RAF Welford, which is near Hungerford. So Welford has recently had a whole new storage of bombs, all their old bombs taken away, and they've updated all their bombs, so that place still exists and is full of bombs ready for the next conflict.
Does this make Gloucester a target?
If there was a nuclear war, then Fairford obviously would be a target.
And what do you know about the nuclear convoys?
I am quite a lot. I've been involved with nuclear convoys for a long, long time. The nuclear UK nuclear factory is near Reading at Atomic Weapons Establishment Burfield. All the bits for the bombs are made at Atomic Weapons Establishment Aldermaston. They're then taken 7 miles away to Burfield, where they assemble and disassemble nuclear weapons. So every now and again, a convoy is loaded up with, I don't know how many warheads, some warheads, Trident warheads, and they're then transported by road in a convoy, heavily armed, all the way to the Royal Naval Armaments Depot at Coalport, and that is right next to the submarine base at South Lane in Scotland. So that's where the weapons are stored. They're not stored in England. When they assemble a warhead, taken up in a convoy and stored at Coalport. When the submarines need a new warhead on their missiles, they're taken round from South Lane to Coalport, and that's where the new missiles and the warheads and everything is loaded up. To carry these weapons, they have to go from Berkshire, Scotland, and then some are brought back from Scotland for maintenance, for checking, and because they are depleted. So that's my interest. I want to monitor these particular convoys, which I regard as the most dangerous cargo in the UK, because they are passing our cities, our schools, our hospitals, and most people are not aware. They just see a convoy that looks like an army convoy and don't take any notice.
NATO?
Yes.
What do you think our future role will be in NATO now that we've chosen the route of Brexit?
Well, it has nothing to do with Brexit, in a way. That's irrelevant to our role in NATO. In fact, our role in NATO is far more important, probably as a treaty, than our European treaties were ever. Most important, we want to found the members of NATO, but it does mean that our nuclear armament is assigned to NATO. So we have no control, really, of where this is going. And targeting is all sorted by NATO. And so we are under the wing of NATO. So we have to do what they've been told. And the problem with NATO started off as a North Atlantic Treaty Organization. That's what it means. It's now fighting in Afghanistan. It's all over the Middle East. And one country in South America has now asked to be part of NATO. So it's expanding all the time, totally different to how the thing was established. The other effect is more closer to us, because at the time, at the end of the Cold War, President Gorbachev and President Reagan got things together and talked, and one of the agreements made was that NATO would not expand into Eastern Europe, into the former Soviet territories. And that's exactly what has happened now. It's gone into the Ukraine, right into the Baltic states, right up to the border of Russia. And we are installing missiles into Poland, Romania, etc. And you can understand this is actually very provocative for the Russians. You can understand they're thinking, well, we actually agreed not to do this, and they're right on our borders. We shouldn't be doing this. We should actually be negotiating and talking with people. What Churchill said, he said, George War, not war war. That's what he said. That's what we should be doing. And so when you have stealth bombers based at Fairford, for example, their role is to go very close to the borders. This time, one of the things they did was to operate with the Norwegian Air Force, the F-35s of the Norwegian Air Force. So they're practicing coming working with European forces close to the Russian border. The U-2 spy planes of Fairford go off and are along the Russian border all the time. So occasionally, when you hear of a Russian bomber coming towards us, it's well tracked from Norway all the way down. It's actually nothing compared with what we're doing. So I think we have to understand NATO is a warlike machine. We are part of it. We have to pay 2% of our national budget now into NATO. Most of the European countries don't do that, but we do. Britain is paying 2% of our national money into NATO every year, into a warlike machine which we disagree with.
Finally, what other things does CND do these days?
CND has been going for a long time. One of our tasks in CND is to look at the workers. So workers at Barrow, instead of building nuclear submarines, they are very skilled people that could be making, for example, wave generating electrical things. It's the second highest tidal rise along that west coast in the world. We could be building things and many more jobs out of that, and we would lead the world. Also, the people, the workers, the very skilled workers in Aldermaston and Burfield, these are very skilled people. We could decommission all our nuclear weapons, so they needn't be thrown out in a scrap heap, these workers. We could actually be part of a campaign to reduce all the weapons in the world and do it. For example, South Africa produced a number of nuclear weapons before the end of apartheid. This was secretly done in conjunction with Israel. How it was discovered in the end was they tried to set the trigger off on Prince Edward Island, which is between South Africa and the Antarctic, but it was spotted by an American satellite, a double flash, which is very indicative of what they were up to. Anyway, after the end of apartheid, Mandela, in secret negotiations, got Aldermaston involved in decommissioning these weapons. I think the Israelis probably stole 3 of the weapons. The other 6 were taken to pieces and disappeared by the help from people like Aldermaston. So it can be done. It's possible to decommission nuclear weapons and for us to feel a lot safer.
And that was Oxford CND spokesman Nigel Day talking about various things, including the expansion of operations, particularly of the B-2 stealth bombers from Fairford Airfield in Gloucestershire. Now, I'm joined by Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers to discuss some of the implications of the unprecedented lockdown. Martin, I suppose the first thing to say is these look like almost world war measures without actually a world war taking place.
Well, and they're taking place all over the world simultaneously as well, which is unusual. And when you say the world war isn't taking place, if you look at the war of words between Pompeo and the Chinese leadership over the source of the virus, hostilities have definitely not been suspended as a result of this threat. And the G7 summit couldn't agree on a statement about the COVID-19 crisis because the US was insisting that it was called the Chinese virus, and the other G7 countries said they weren't going to go along with that. So no statement was made, no final statement was made. And the attack on the Chinese system of government by the current US regime, if we can call it that, seems to be intensifying rather than anything else.
There is definitely accusations. I don't think they're stating it as fact, but certainly the Chinese and the Iranians are saying we strongly suspect that the virus was introduced into China at these military world games in November 2019, which actually took place in Wuhan. And now, as part of those games, thousands of soldiers from all over the world were doing a kind of little mini Olympics. So what do you make of those accusations?
It's quite clear that the US is hinting that the source of the virus was the biolaboratory in Wuhan, although the mainstream are all still being, you know, saying that it was, you know, just passed from bats via this market. But the Chinese are responding, will say, as you say, by saying, well, look, we've had a load of your military over here in November. Very interesting stuff, which we mentioned last week on the show, about the Taiwanese virologist saying that the variety of haplotypes of the virus suggests that the source was in the United States. And of course, there is a very serious question, which is that the US equivalent of Portland Down, Fort Detrick, was closed in July last year. And we need to know why. Why did you close it down?
Well, I can tell you why they closed it down, Martin, and that was because there were checks done on the site, and the government in the United States discovered that it was possible for biological agents to leak from the site, that basically the procedures there were not good enough, and that's why they closed it down.
You've got to the point about Fort Detrick is we know that that was the source of the anthrax, which killed 6 people post 9/11. We know that. That's an established...
Okay, the anthrax, the 9/11 anthrax, by the way, was sent to both senators, congress people, and editors of major media in the United States directly after the 9/11 attacks.
That's
right. So with looking at the potential origin, you mentioned these haplotypes. Now, there are more haplotypes, which is basically a kind of strain of the virus, in the United States than in China and other places. That does suggest potentially that it was originated there and it's been mutating more in the United States because it's been there longer. But it also suggests that maybe the virus has come back to the US and mutated since it's come back for some reason more in the US than elsewhere.
Well, that may be so. I mean, it's quite possible, let's just be logical here, that it is a virus which has just evolved naturally. And, this crisis has been created by a natural event. But the fact that both sides are suggesting that the other side created a bioweapon, and the fact that the way in which it works, it doesn't kill loads of people, but it creates massive disruption so that the Chinese economy, which has overtaken the size of the US economy in recent years, they've become bigger than the US, and the US doesn't like that. That's been put down, you know, way back. You know, they've been not for six. And at the same time as their pig herd died of African swine fever last year, and their flock of chickens has also got the bird flu. And it wouldn't be surprising for the Chinese Communist Party to conclude that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, especially as Pompeo keeps insisting that the Chinese are responsible for this virus as part of the electoral politics inside the US. That doesn't bode well. And don't forget, the year started with an illegal assassination of a top Iranian general without any consultation with the British by the Americans, whatever. Where, you know, the possibility...
Well, also, Martin,
beginning the war was quite real.
Let's think about also the detention of the chief financial officer of Huawei, obviously a very important person in Canada, yeah. And the still attempt to extradite her to the United States. And this, of course, is the, many people say, is the trigger for the legislation brought in to try and extradite people from Hong Kong into mainland China, which led to all of the conflict last year. But anyway, let's have a little look at some of the things which really haven't been reported very much, which is the, I'm really shocked to see the lack of reporting on the emergency legislation in the UK about this coronavirus and really to, you know, enforce the lockdown effectively. That one of the concerns about that is that people's regular healthcare has been completely sidelined. I mean, I know personally one elderly chap who has a pre-existing condition who is extremely worried that he's now not getting the treatment that he was getting before. Part of this new legislation is downgrading the disabled care in the new emergency laws. Also, it does look as if these new emergency laws, so-called emergency laws, are going to be in place for 2 years. Now, there were calls for a sunset clause after 6 months, after 9 months, but that, apparently that is not going to happen, that this is going to be in place for 2 years. Now, that seems a really incredibly long time to deal with the disease, especially at a time when the government itself has downgraded the disease. It's no longer considered a high consequence infectious disease. That's in short an HCID. And so it does look as if there's going to be some fairly serious consequences with this legislation, this new legislation, doing all sorts of things like stopping doctors, two doctors having to section someone for a limited period of time. I think it used to be 6 months or so. Now one doctor can section anybody, in other words, get them confined to a mental hospital indefinitely. So what do you make of the reporting and the measures that have been brought in, Martin?
The parliamentarians who decided to try and put a sunset clause in this were right. Even if the measures are justified, you don't want to have, I mean, and it may take 2 years for this to play itself out. You still don't have to give legislation for 2 years. You can have it renewed if people are happy with it after 3 months or 6 months. But of course, Parliament itself has now been closed down. So maybe that's the end of that. And of course, that then leads to questions about whether elections are going to take place and so on. I would argue that people should be able to be told what to do in an emergency like this without being forced. If you tell people what they need to do and explain to them why they need to do it, then they should do it without being coerced. But of course, the danger is that this is part of a psychological warfare operation. So let's just, what Larry Romanoff has suggested in he's based in Shanghai, but he's an American. He's saying that the it may have leaked out into the US last year. It's been running around in the US for quite a while. They had a panic, decided what they can do. What we can do is we can seed it inside China and Iran, and then we can say they started it, and then there will be all the consequences we're having. Don't forget, we haven't even mentioned the financial and economic consequences, which are devastating. The civil liberties aspects are important, but they're really secondary in many respects. And then, of course, you've got to cover for the collapse of the Western banking system and the imposition of martial law. It's all COVID-19. That's the reason. And of course, it's not necessarily COVID-19. That's the reason they wanted martial law anyway, and the COVID-19 gives them a cover.
Now, that one of the other things about the bailouts and this legislation is that there are lots and lots of medium and small businesses that have effectively been forced to close. I mean, over here in New Zealand, where I am stuck on holiday, although, you know, we have a lockdown here too for 3 weeks. But the thing is that the timing may be much longer. Obviously, we realise that. Is that even very large businesses, which are chains across the country, one butchery chain, which is just all it does is sell food, has been told, no, you're going to have to close. Only the large supermarket chains are being able to stay open. And so there are lots and lots of medium and small businesses that effectively have to just grind to a halt.
Yeah, and of course, if you knew that something like this was going to happen, and clearly there's been insider trading by politicians in the US senators who were briefed for how bad it was going to be sold all their stock market positions whilst pretending that there was not going to be any major problem. There's actually court cases that are now being initiated in the US about that. But if people say, well, what, the capitalists wouldn't destroy their own system in this way? Well, perhaps they would, because don't forget, the collapse of the stock markets was going to happen anyway. The idea that COVID-19 has caused the collapse of all of these derivative trade positions is just wrong. The Federal Reserve was already pumping extra heroin into the system last year in order to keep the banking system afloat. It was cruising towards the wall. And the COVID-19 situation just provides a perfect cover for the collapse. And of course, the bailout of Wall Street as well. But what's just been passed by the US Congress is a massive handout to the usual suspects.
Okay, Martin, I mean, this is speculation, and we had the same speculation from David Halpin, but one of the things that's absolute fact is the effect of this is to digitise our social communications. The idea is we're not really supposed to be speaking to each other face-to-face anymore, but they're happy for us to go on Facebook or Snapchat, and everything has got to go online, apart from immediate, you know, communication in your own family, spouses, children, that sort of thing. It's causing an enormous amount of our daily discussions to be digitised and therefore absolutely open to what we know through all sorts of legislation that's been brought in Britain, really, to cover up for criminal activity that was going on before, but it's surveillance-wise, that this is all being looked at. And this surveillance is increasing. I mean, the particular problem is that there is a whole bunch of data analysts in Britain have written a letter to the government saying, well, we think that the legislation you're bringing in to follow people, which is looking at where exactly everybody is at any one time, it's called contact tracking, is actually breaks all civil liberties. The idea that you're following everybody at all times, so that if one person is found to have contracted this virus, that you can then track everybody back to see who they've been near, that this is an extremely important measure too.
Well, it's a very dangerous measure. At the same time, Tony, we're not carrying out any testing. It's quite clear that the regime in China and South Korea and Singapore, who've managed to get on top of this, have been testing everybody to find out whether they've got the virus or not. We haven't been doing that. So then we have a poor second best is to track the mobile phone tracking of individual people. But if you don't know whether they've got the virus or not anyway, what's the point of that? And that raises questions, doesn't it? And of course, it looks very much like business interests and big pharma are definitely pulling the strings, particularly in the US and Britain, in the response to this crisis. So, and I've just been reading very interesting stuff by Pepe Escobar on Voltaire earlier, but it's also on the Saker, about how Macron has prevented testing in France, and he's basically that what they're going to push forward is a big form of a compulsory vaccine as the solution to the problem. And of course, knowing what we know about how the intelligence services work in the West, that the 9/11 attack was an inside job. Donald Trump, on the day of the attack, said those buildings were bombed. They don't just collapse like that. I want to remind all of our listeners of that. That's what he said on the day. And that shows that the 9/11 attack was definitely not carried out by people from caves in Afghanistan. Now, that means that when Pompeo, who's been on the record as saying that he lies, he cheats, he steals, that's what the CIA taught me to do. When he says, believe me, the Chinese started this virus, I believe, basically, I don't believe you. And why should I take you seriously as somebody to tell me what to do in a crisis like this?
OK, Martin. November 2019, we had calls from the Health Secretary Matt Hancock for a mandatory vaccinations. I mean, this is before this all broke out, at least.
Well,
you would say that.
So why is he saying we're going to have mandatory vaccines when we haven't even got a vaccine? Or maybe they do have a vaccine. Don't forget, 30,000 US soldiers are currently appearing in Eastern Europe
they're saying that's all been scaled right back, Martin. So,
well, nevertheless, they're still coming.
We're not sure how many soldiers are coming.
You thought when you're banning people flying across the Atlantic, why are you sending all of these soldiers to either bring infection in or take it back?
I mean, it's interesting to note that Robert Horton has flagged this up at Shannon Airport, where many of these troop flights stop and rest there, that no US soldiers are allowed into the terminal building. They all have to stay in the airplanes, except in exceptional circumstances. And we're not told what those exceptional circumstances are, though. But look, let's get on to the other. I mean, we've been talking there briefly about November 2019, which seems crucial in uncovering what's really going on with the coronavirus. Because of the World Military Games in Wuhan. But also at that time, Bill Gates was looking at something called Event 201, which was an exercise involving a massive virus breakout around the world. Now, this was only a paper exercise, but it is an interesting coincidence. And now what we're hearing literally in the last few days is that Bill Gates wants to have something called what he's calling ID 2020, which is a digital identity, is talking about an implanted microchip which will tell everybody whether or not you've been vaccinated. And I'm assuming that's for COVID-19. So those people who have been vaccinated can then choose to have this chip so that everybody and all the surveillance systems will know that they have been vaccinated for COVID-19 and that they apparently can't catch it.
If this is a natural virus, we want to use the latest technology, including our data collection technology, to fight it. But of course, there's got to be a suspicion that this is actually a power grab. There's got to be, given what we know about what's gone on in the past, that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that David Kelly probably was assassinated because he knew too much about things he shouldn't have known about. And that the 9/11 attack, buildings don't collapse like that. You're quite right. They've carried on building skyscrapers ever since. And you'd have thought if they just collapsed like that, there must be a design flaw. So we wouldn't be building them like that. But of course, we are building them like that. And the world knows. And I'll tell you who does know. The Russian general staff, the Chinese general staff, and the Iranian general staff all know very well that the US is run by gangsters. So when they say, we're all on your side, let's all work together to try and stop COVID-19, which is not what they're not saying that. But even if they were saying that, they wouldn't trust them.
And Martin, going back to the civil liberties aspects of this, they're also talking about, I mean, they're obviously talking about surveillance of people, you tracking their mobile phones and that sort of thing. Potentially, I don't know what the situation is in the UK, but here in New Zealand, they're saying they're not going to be putting up roadblocks. They haven't really been talking about police state or state of emergency. What we've heard here in New Zealand is that the government doesn't want to use these terms because they might cause panic. But actually, that is what's in place.
Yeah, but I mean, and you can see that I'm in two minds, as reasonable people should be, about this. Because in many ways, the unselfish behavior of Cuban doctors as they go in to try and deal with pandemics and epidemics in the developing world is absolutely exemplary, but that implies that you've got to have some kind of, you know, controlling public officials in charge of it all. The West isn't run like that. I mean, basically, the West is, I mean, did you see the people that Trump had with him on his press conferences? It's not mostly medical people, it's the heads of big corporations. Amazon and Google and all these other people are there with him saying that we're going to fight this virus together. But they're basically private organizations with a private agenda.
Well, maybe one of the purposes of this legislation and the lockdown as a reaction to the virus is to squash all of their competition.
Well, yes. And of course, if you know what you're doing, you can benefit from from a disaster. You just have to be in the right place at the right time. And there was going to be a crash anyway. The COVID-19 aspect of the crash means that it's been very, very severe and very quick, but it was going to happen anyway, and it provides a perfect cover for governments to then... I mean, basically, Wall Street has just been given another paycheck from the taxpayers in the US, and then nobody's paying any attention because everybody's worried about...
Well, but it'll be interesting to see if any of that filters down to ordinary people. Look, OK, so the question is, I suppose... Now that we're not allowed to meet except, I suppose, on some sort of internet chat place, is dissent possible? Is it a good idea for dissenters, for political meetings to take place, for the potentially government measures to be questioned, criticised by the population?
Well, I think a key thing for me is we need to get testing doing so that we've got some idea of how many people have actually got the virus and whether it actually leads automatically to bad. Some people might get the virus and have no symptoms. Again, that could be an aspect of it as a biowarfare weapon. But why aren't we testing? In South Korea, they've been testing to try and work out who the hell's got it. Because if you can work out who's got it, then the people who haven't got it can get on with their business.
Well, I mean, maybe the impetus on the government not to test is because they might find rather more cases than they want.
Or rather less. Do you see what I mean?
It could be. Also, Martin, finally, what's your would you like to speculate on how long these extreme measures will be in place? We're told here 4 weeks. You've got 3 weeks, but it may well be longer.
The hope is that if we really go for it straight away with a big lockdown.
When you say go for it, that means they're trying to flatten the curve. That's the point, isn't it?
They don't want the hospitals to be overrun. I mean, the London hospitals are basically saying today we're being overwhelmed. And of course, that then leads a knock-on effect of all these other people who actually need healthcare can't get to a hospital or a doctor because they're overwhelmed with the coronavirus. So they start dying. Then, of course, people start losing their jobs and get put. Then they get kicked out of their houses because they can't pay the rent. How can you self-isolate if you're just being evicted? That's the danger. And, of course, all of these things then come to a head in the United States where everybody's got automatic weapons.
That's one thing we've seen here in New Zealand is a big increase in queues at the gun shops before they were closed. I suppose what we're seeing really is a division of people from healthy scepticism, obviously obeying the sensible rules to stop spreading any kind of contamination, and those who are militantly obedient. What we've seen certainly here is a sort of rise in the little Hitlers, people who are shouting at you. And Jacinda, the Prime Minister here, has said, look, be kind. You know, there's no need to be a little Hitler. She hasn't said that. That's me.
Well, I think what you're finding here in Bristol, I've been going out every day, is there's definitely a sort of wary camaraderie developing. You know, people that wouldn't normally talk to you are talking to you. Yeah. But at the same time, people are clearly fearful. And, you're seeing some of the best in people's human behavior. And also you're seeing people behaving rather badly as they just try and look after number one and don't think of anybody else. But I mean, that's what you'd expect to find.
I suppose it's done for me anyway is it's shown me the value of face-to-face contact. And that's the one thing we're being told in some ways, certainly by people on the radio, you're not allowed to go out. Well, that's just simply not the case.
Yeah, well, I think we are going out here in Bristol, but people are keeping a fairly safe.
I mean, obviously, it makes sense for elderly people not to, potentially, but, you are allowed to go out. And I think the face-to-face stuff seems to me to be, in a way, a bit like what happened in the Arab Spring in Egypt, in Cairo, when they switched the internet off, everybody went out and started organising protests and stuff.
You can see that you can't, because of the nature of this situation, that's not going to be so straightforward, is it? The effects of this are going to carry on for decades. This is the big inflection point. We're going to be living with the consequences of this for the rest of our lives, all of us.
This is an edited version of the Politics Show special on Dialect. If you want the full version, it's almost 1 hour and 40 minutes long. Please go to thisweek.org.uk and you can download that to listen as an MP3. That's thisweek.org.uk.
Time to sign off now for the USA and Comcast News at 11 for the BCFM broadcast of this podcast and on Monday evening. Thanks to our guests, David Halpin and Nigel Day from Oxford CND. Also to Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers and studio engineer Dave Bazanko. You can download our MP3s and listen in the car or anywhere you like. You'll find this show's podcast, story links, comment page and our contact details at thisweek.org.uk. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable BCFM week. I'll be back in the UK in April, God willing. Do please join us on the BCFM emergency schedule Dialect Politics Show online on Friday or on FM at 10 p.m. Monday. God bless.
and don't let the banksters get you down.
Down and dirty, baby. Down and dirty, baby.